Your home for classic hits, 1570 AM, 96.9 FM, and now at 102.7 FM. This is WILO, Frankfurt, Lebanon, Delphi.
Well, Jeff, the news seems to be full of supply chain issues, delayed shipping, rising prices, and inflation. How's that affecting us here at Bjerk's Fine Jewelry?
Honestly, Liz, not in the least bit. Our prices are sharp as ever. Our values are the best in the business. You can compare the mega box stores, the internet, or even the big city diamond districts, and you still won't find the deals we offer.
Well, that will make our customers very happy. But I've heard that many businesses are struggling to find product and maintain inventories.
Not here at Bjerk's Fine Jewelry. We work very hard with our suppliers to make sure diamonds, gemstones, and jewelry continue to arrive and keep our selection fresh and exciting.
So let me get this straight. Our customers can stroll into Bjerk's and still get unbeatable prices, top-notch quality, first-class service, and the area's largest inventory to make the perfect jewelry choice?
You sum that up pretty well, Liz. But don't forget, we also have the area's largest selection of coins and precious metals bullion. Some dealers have really struggled to source sufficient quantities, but here at Bjerk's, we are fully stocked.
You know, Jeff, we're pretty lucky to have been serving the Lafayette community for over 75 years.
Shop smart, shop Bjerk's, Bjerk's.com.
We know you have choices, and at Encompass Credit Union, it's our commitment to community that sets us apart. Hi, I'm Matt Lambert, CEO of Encompass Credit Union. We offer a range of services with you in mind, from home banking to mobile banking on the go and e-statements for a greener approach. Plus, our card services makes managing your finances a breeze. At Encompass, we're not just a financial institution. We're your neighbors, your friends, your community. Ready to experience the difference? Visit EncompassCU.org today. Encompass Credit Union, community-minded, just like you.
Are you ready for a smoother ride? Head over to Big O Tires, the team you trust next to Parkies in Lebanon. Their expert team is dedicated to keeping you on the road with top quality tires and exceptional service. Schedule your appointment today for a hassle-free experience. Call Big O Tires in Lebanon today. And don't forget to check Big O Tires out on Facebook for exclusive deals and updates. And like manager John and owner Alan always say,
and don't forget, go Cowboys.
Come on, John.
People ask a lot of questions about Ivy Tech Community College. Like, can an Ivy Tech degree get me a good career? Well, some say good, and some say great. In 2 years or less, you can earn an associate degree or certificate, qualifying you for some of Indiana's fastest growing career fields, and earning you an average of $37,777 the first year after graduation. Find your answers at ivytech.edu/FAQ. Then apply for free at ivytech.edu.
Did you know there are benefits to window tinting other than that cool and sleek look? Keeping your vehicle's interior protected is one of those benefits. Marchand's Window Tinting does top quality window tint installation that comes with a lifetime warranty. Located on State Road 39 in Antioch, Marchand's Window Tinting is professional and locally owned with years of expertise.
This is Alan Marchand at Marchand's Window Tinting, and we stick it where the sun shines.
Trust the experts at Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, your independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Whether it's residential or commercial, they've got you covered with service contracts, generator service, and custom ductwork fabrication. Jim serves Clinton, Boone, and Carroll County, including surrounding areas. Family owned with decades of combined experience, Jim's is proud of their A+ Better Business Bureau rating.
Jim here from Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning. Remember, trusted service and local excellence.
765-601-1461. Call today.
Hey everyone, it's Rick with Freckles Graphics. You want to make a long-lasting impression without breaking the bank? Freckles Graphics is your one-stop spot for all your marketing needs with a wide range of services including graphic design, screen printing, embroidery, embossing, laser etching, all your signage and promotional needs. Trust the pros at Freckles Graphics. We got you covered. Get what you want, how you want, and when you want it without sacrificing quality. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. So check us out at FrecklesGraphics.com. That's FrecklesGraphics.com, your partner in success.
This is it, geese. Time to lower the altitude.
But why, Dad? It's harder to fly down there.
To get a bird's eye view of TC trailers, son.
TC trailers?
Look, there, over 300 trailers on the lot, including goosenecks. They have more parts than we have feathers and a full in-house repair shop. If humans aren't pulling a TC trailer, son, they're not pulling their weight. Fly in or visit tc-trailers.com.
Good to have you along for Party Line on Boone's Best 102.7 and WILO, presented by Clinton Carroll, Boone County Daily News.com, Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, Freckles Graphics, Big Deals. Big O Tires in Lebanon, Ivy Tech Community College, Vierks Fine Jewelry, Marshan's Window Tinning, Encompass Credit Union, and TC Trailers. You can watch Party Line. HoosierlandTV.com is the location for that. And that's brought to you by Newell Gas, Welty Exteriors, Arborwood by Shoops, Freckles Graphics, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Shoops Country Foods, CMIM Carpet Cleaning, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, TC Trailers, Reinhardt Realtors, Day and Ginda Funeral Home, Culligan Water of Boone and Clinton County, The Farmers Bank, and 51 West Event Center. 765-659-3338 if you have any questions. And we appreciate Tom for joining us today from Grissom Air Museum. And now we're lucky enough to have Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summers with us this morning. Hey, Tony, how are you today?
I'm well.
Lots going on locally. Now we can finally ask questions that we couldn't ask really before.
Well, to an extent.
Yes. No, I know. There's been so much talk with the Delphi murder trials and everything over in Delphi, and a lot of things, you know, we just can't talk about because we don't know the answers to, or things are kind of hush-hush. And I, sure. I guess the only thing I want to know now is we assume that there will be an appeal.
Well, there has to be a sentencing first.
Okay.
So next will be a sentencing. And then after the sentencing, the accused does have an opportunity to file either a motion to correct error. They want to allege that there was some error in the trial to give the court an opportunity to fix an error in law. But the other opportunity they have is to file for an appeal. And there are time limits that they have for making those filings, 30 days from the entry of the judgment on the verdicts that were returned. And if they don't file within the time limits, then the right of appeal is extinguished. It's either do it then or don't do it. There's always post-conviction relief on down the road, but as to a right of appeal, that's when it arises.
So what's the time limit for all of that? I mean,
well, 30 days for the motion to correct error or to request an appeal. That's from the entry of the judgment on the verdicts, which won't happen until there's a sentencing. So they have a sentencing date, and then they'll have, after that, the right will arise to try and seek an appeal.
Wow.
How long can it take? Years.
Yeah.
That's what I deal with. People think that after we conduct a trial that it's over. I'm still dealing with cases that were subject of entries of conviction 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So you think that I'm just dealing with cases that are active cases, and I'm not. I'm dealing with lots of other cases that have been handled here in the county.
So there's basically no statute of limitation?
Well, there's a statute of limitations on when actions can be brought.
Okay.
And then there are time limits on when an appeal can be filed. But then as to trying to challenge for post-conviction relief, that's going to be up to the courts. So they file to set aside a verdict that was entered sometime in the past because they want to argue something that's available in the law, denial of due process, ineffective assistance of counsel, newly discovered evidence. There are all sorts of arguments that can be made that can try to attack a conviction that was entered in the past.
Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summers is our guest today, and I suppose we've hashed that enough, so
yeah. it seems like it's enough to tell you that, is it really over?
And it's not really, is it?
Well, there's a verdict, and the jury heard the evidence and returned a verdict, and now the court will move on to a sentencing on those verdicts, and the sentencing ranges available to the court would be 45 years to 65 years, just each count of murder. Those sentences can be stacked one on top of the other. The advisory sentence for each crime of murder in the state of Indiana is 55 years.
I think one of the questions that I have had people ask me, and I honestly didn't know the answer to it, there were four counts.
Yes.
But there are only two victims.
Correct. Well, you can have other crimes that were charged in addition to the crime of murder. And then murder can be charged in different ways. There's a knowing and intentional killing of a person, but then there's also a felony murder statute, which is in the course of committing a felony crime that you killed a person. And so under the circumstances, you could get into the weeds of the actual counts filed. They returned verdicts as to all counts that were filed in the case. The jury did.
All right.
Very interesting. One of the things that we had a question somebody asked us is how often do charges change from preliminary charges from officers to the official charge then that you file?
Well, first of all, officers don't file charges. So that's the first misconception that people have. Officers make arrests. They make arrests based on probable cause. And so they'll identify in the reports that they file what they thought they had probable cause for. The first charges that are filed by a prosecuting attorney. Prosecuting attorneys are the only ones that have authority to file criminal charges under our laws. So we review the reports. We review the information as to what the officer believed they had probable cause for. There are times when we disagree and don't think they had probable cause for a crime, and we don't file any charges at all. There are other times when we say, well, yes, you had that, but you also had, there's also this and that and another thing that we're going to file charges on. And so it's quite common that what is formally charged is different than what the officer arrested for. Different in the sense of it often is not only what they arrested for, but it's also some additional crimes.
So basically, when you're making those kinds of decisions, you have to go through those reports thoroughly.
Yes.
To dissect them.
Yes. And it depends on when arrests are made. If the person is still in custody, their court appearance will be the next day that the courts are open for business. So weekend arrest Monday, typically in the afternoon. Weekdays, when the arrests were made, it'll be the following business day. And we will be reviewing the reports, and we will be trying to get video in some instances, but we can't always get to the video in time for people who are in custody because it takes time for that to upload from the officer's equipment to the server where they're housed at the police departments that we then can pull the information through and look at it. Sometimes we're relying on police reports only. Other times we have to follow up and ask the officer for more information because there's not enough information in the report. They're completing the reports. They're trying to be thorough and accurate, but sometimes what we need to know just isn't documented. So we have to seek more information. For people who are not in custody, we have even more time to try to get additional information on the case, to look at video as to how things happened, because with car camera and body-worn recording devices that police now have, there's always a wealth of audio and video information related to any interaction people have with police.
So that was going to be my question. You mentioned the video. Has that made your job, I don't want to use the term easier because I don't think it's easier, but has it made it, I guess, more clear getting information to file charges?
Well, you work in the media business. Do you think that audio and video makes your jobs more clear?
I think it would, and I think it would in yours too.
I think that it makes it more certain as to what actually happened. I agree with that. But in terms of interpreting what happens, it's just this explosion of information with regard to criminal justice cases. Go back in time. Back in the early days when I was a police officer, and what I said happened at the scene is pretty much what prosecutors followed through on when they prosecuted a case. Now there's what the police officer says, and there's video, and there's body-worn recording, and there's people who have cell phone recordings. There's security video at convenience stores, retail establishments, convenience, gas station, parking lots. Ring camera doorbell video. And so there's just been this explosion of information. Bear in mind, it's just like what you encounter in the media, that each one only captures their point of view. I mean, it's physically limited in scope and time. And so you try to piece all of that together and see if it's all consistent or if it's not consistent. So makes it more definite, makes it more certain, but also provides for a lot more information, which also then provides for a lot more grounds for attorneys, because attorneys are, this is what they're for, they argue things, and they will argue whatever openings are given to them.
I could see where, it would definitely complicate things.
Not complicate, just make more detailed.
Right.
It has made it far more detailed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We also had the question, how are juvenile cases and charges dealt with in our county?
Well, like every other county, accusations of juvenile delinquency go to the juvenile probation department. The juvenile probation department has an opportunity to handle allegations of delinquency informally. Sometimes they will decide to handle them formally. If they decide to handle them formally, their recommendation on allegations of juvenile delinquency are referred to the prosecutor's office, where they are filed with the court. And then the circuit court here in the county is the court that handles all of the allegations, formal allegations of juvenile delinquency, where they juvenile delinquency covers a broad range of activity, where it could be just being an incorrigible youth or being a runaway, to accusations that the juvenile committed an act that would have been a crime if it had been committed by an adult. So you have a broad range of activities that are being dealt with in that system.
How's the juvenile court system differ from the adult court, other besides the actual rendering of decisions as far as sentencing?
Well, there's not a jury. It is always going to be a presentation of evidence to the judge. The judge is the fact finder in a juvenile proceeding. And the only time that an accusation of juvenile delinquency would wind up being subject of a jury proceeding is if there's a waiver, because certain allegations of juvenile delinquency can be waived into adult court, in which case, if it goes to an adult court, it is handled just like a normal criminal offense committed by an adult, where there is a jury available to determine whether or not the allegation is true.
Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summers is our guest on Party Line today.
So when you're working with when you have to bring a juvenile up you have to bring them up on charges, even in that, I mean, is what happens when they're found guilty? What do you find most of the issues are? And
well, it's not a crime. They're not found guilty. It's either the petition for delinquency is found true or not true.
Okay.
And so either they're found to have been delinquent or not delinquent. And so the remedies that are then available for delinquency can be some period of detention. Juvenile detention centers are available to the county. We don't have one locally, so detention has to be done outside of the county. There's also the girls' school or the boys' school, which it's typically indeterminate. The amount of time that they will send in boys' school or girls' school depends on if they comply with the programs that they participate at in those facilities and they complete them successfully, then they're available to return. They don't have to go to detention on a finding that a delinquent act has been committed. It can also be handled informally. It can go back to just counseling and keeping in touch with juvenile probation. There is juvenile probation handles probationers very much like the adult system does, where there's a penalty that's stayed that's over the person's head, and if they don't comply, some portion of that penalty can be imposed upon them. So there's the broad range of remedies available.
We just saw in the Delphi murders trial how difficult it can be to get juries sometime. And so can you tell us a little bit about how jury selection works, and especially with big cases like that, where, you know, they're going to different counties? And so tell us about that a little bit.
Well, that was unique in the sense of there was a specific finding by the court that they needed to draw a jury from outside of Carroll County. Usually a jury would be drawn from the county in which the offense occurred. So that's not uncommon in the sense of it has happened elsewhere and can happen in other cases, but it doesn't happen all the time. In that sense, it's rather unique that happened there. Jury selection otherwise, the jury pool is put together by a jury administrator. It's a random draw that's from people who are in voter registration, vehicle registration, property ownership records in the county. And so there's no picking and choosing. It's randomly the names are pulled from those sources. That panel of names then is given to the court, notices are served by the sheriff's office. in the selection process, as the trial begins, both the prosecutor and the defense attorney have an opportunity to pose questions to those prospective jurors with the goal of trying to select a jury of people who can be objective, that they will be guided by the instructions on the law given by the court, and they don't have any preconceived notions as to what the outcome should be.
And how do they decide if a jury is going to be sequestered and all of that versus not? How are some of those decisions made? And what are the rules for the actual juries? I know there are sometimes there are rules for them. They, I don't know, can't talk. And so tell us about that a little bit.
Well, the jury rules are a part of Indiana's criminal trial rules. And so they're following the court, and the parties are following those rules as they give instructions to the jury on how this will proceed. They are not permitted to discuss the evidence except when they're all together. They are to refrain from any contact with other persons while they're serving on a jury. Even if they're not sequestered, they're given that instruction. And if someone were to approach them, they're supposed to report it to the bailiff. Bailiff who is in charge of the jury keeps them together throughout the proceedings, is a source of contact for the jurors during the course of the trial, but not for information about the law, but for simple matters like, you know, okay, where am I going to get a parking permit so they don't tow my car while I'm here on jury service and those kinds of things. So that is all normal and routine. Sequestering a jury is not normal, but it's always within the power of the court to decide that given the nature of the case and the attention to the case, that sequestration of the jury is appropriate in that case.
That was going to be my next question, so I'm glad you went ahead and went into that. So when you have a jury, they've heard all the evidence, they go back and they talk and they go over the evidence. Does there have to be a unanimous decision, conscious decision between the jurors in order for a conviction?
Yes. Yes, that's part of what they are told in the instructions, that they have to find their verdict independently, their judgment based on the evidence. But then before they can return a verdict in the case, they must unanimously agree on the verdict. So all of the jurors had to say, yes, that's my verdict. They can be polled in the courtroom after the verdict is returned. Each individually questioned, is that your verdict? And that's a normal part of a proceeding, especially in a serious case, that would have taken place. And so they are questioned about that to ensure that that's what happened.
Is there a certain length of time that if a jury can't come to a unanimous decision, that the court will wait until they decide that it's basically a hung jury?
The court does have the ability to decide if the jury is reporting we can't reach a unanimous verdict, whether or not it's a hung jury. And there's no specific set time limit for that to occur. The judge will decide that case by case, in part depending upon communication between the jury and the court with the attorneys for the parties present, prosecutor and the defense attorneys present, when those discussions take place. The court cannot tell the jury that they have to find a verdict, but there's going to be a dialogue with the jurors to find out what progress they're making. Is there anything the court can do to assist them? I think that the verdict in the Delphi case was reached about 19 hours into deliberations. Let's bear in mind this was, a three-week trial?
Mm-hmm.
I don't consider that really unusual at all, okay? I don't.
No.
Now, I've seen juries return in 15 minutes, and I've seen them in even simple cases return hours after they began deliberations. What happens in the jury room is not recorded. There's not a record of it. The only people that know what happened in that jury room are the jurors. And so it's the kind of thing where they're given the space and the privacy that they need to engage in whatever deliberations that they need to. But they're given guidance that you're supposed to maintain your independent judgment. And if you're not all in agreement, without, you know, harm to one another, to discuss it, to figure out why there are differences, and see if you can't come to agreement on the verdict.
With some of the cases that you've dealt with, is it common to, have you seen a lot of instances where they've asked for to revisit the evidence and everything?
Yes, that's not uncommon. They're given the exhibits, first of all, typically, but not all of the exhibits lend themselves to being able to examine in the jury room. Audio, video exhibits have to be played on equipment that don't necessarily have that equipment in the jury room. They may have to ask if they want to revisit specific exhibits in the case. They have all the physical exhibits that were introduced, documents and other evidence, as was placed on the record over the course of the trial. They have those available to look at and examine in the jury room.
So if they do want to see that kind of stuff, if they want to go back and revisit those, then how does that take place?
They're instructed that they have any questions, that often those questions can be answered by re-examining the instructions that were read to them, but otherwise that they can tender a question to the bailiff. When they have questions, they'll give the question to the bailiff. The bailiff brings the question in for the court to read it with the attorneys present, and then the court decides how to respond to the question.
A lot of information here today.
Yeah.
Tony, we are about...
You're in my world. This is what happens. This is what I do.
We love having you in here because it's always an educational journey every time you're here, and we love it. The holidays are coming up.
They are. Thanksgiving is upon us. Yeah. I won't be back before Thanksgiving, so this gives me an opportunity to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And please travel safely when you're going to visit friends and family over the holidays.
And try not to visit you, right?
Well, they don't want to see me in the courtroom after the holidays.
That's what she means. let's rephrase that a little. That's what she means. All right. Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Somers has been our guest for the second part of Party Line here today. I was going to bring Sam in for just a second. Sam, are you out there? I just wanted him to touch on like 5 seconds.
Can I pet your puppy dog?
Oh, of course.
Before I leave? He's all curled up.
Maybe he's not hearing. Anyway, I thought he would just touch on Inside the Huddle for a minute tomorrow. But anyway... The guys will have Inside the Huddle
he may
Saturday.
Be tired after last night.
I mean, he might be, and I don't know if somebody's up front, but anyway.
Broadcasting that ball game.
All right. Well, Tony, thank you so much for being our guest today. We appreciate it. You've been listening to Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7.